Bautista hammers the first pitch.
That's gone.
That one is getting out of here.
Jose Bautista with a thunderous blast to deep left center.
Ewan Curry with his first big league home run call. Jose Bautista with his 31st of the season, and it's 5-1 Blue Jays. Jose Bautista with that home run in the bottom of the fifth, and Ewan Curry of the Sheepdogs was up here with us when that happened, and he had a microphone in his hand, and I just got out of the way, basically. That made it 5-1. The Blue Jays went on to a 5-3 win over the Detroit Tigers tonight. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Jays Talk. We will get to your calls. Dave Bedini is here with us from Bedini Band, from Rio Statics, from writing books and stuff.
How about that?
Big baseball fan. And we're going to talk to Dave. We're going to talk to Dave in 2.5 minutes because first.
I got to wait 2.5 minutes.
You got to wait 2.5 minutes. All right. Sit tight. Listen close because John Gibbons had his little pregame thingamajig. And we're going to listen in. Here's what John Gibbons had to say in the wake of tonight's win over the Detroit Tigers.
Gibby, you got a more encouraging outing from R.A. tonight.
Yeah, he was really good. But he's been, if you look back the last few months, he's been really good. On this last road trip, Philly got roughed up a little bit, and then, just that first inning out in Anaheim, and other than that, he was really good. So he's on a nice little roll. It's a good lineup they're facing, throwing out there, too, and he had some guys in that lineup that had hit him in the past. He gave up the home run, and then he held him in check, and Ghost got him late. Ghost has got some pop, but you don't expect home runs at him, And then the bullpen came and did a great job, all three of them.
John, you can really see the players feeding off the crowd, and, obviously for some of these guys, they've never played in front of this type of atmosphere. Can you see it in the players as well?
Well, I know they all feel good. I mean, you can just sense from the first inning on, the noise level. I mean, it's not always like that. It's really nice when it's in your home crowd. They've been in other ballparks on the road where they get some of that, but they're against you, so here they're for you. And that, it does wonders. When there's a little roar in the crowd, instead of just silence, that's big.
Gibby, did you have low warming up specifically if Ari got in trouble? And could you talk about the defensive plays by Goins and by Tulowitzki?
Yeah, well, to start with the defense, that play in the eighth inning, that first play Tulo made, it doesn't get any better than that. Off balance, jumping, throwing, and of course a great pick over there by Smokey. And then, Goins, Go-Go, I don't think that surprised anybody. I mean, that's from day one he showed up here. He's been as good as any second baseman probably you're going to find out there. So, yeah, and as far as with Lowe going on, earlier in the sixth inning we had him just in case he got a little jam there. Seventh inning, if two guys got on, it was either going to be him or Cecil. You look at the numbers. Cecil has been really good against the middle of that lineup, and, I wanted to give R.A. one more ghost and then at least have the right-hander for Raj, Luckily, the two-run homer pulled it close, but the rest of the guys came in. I mean, that's a big out, Rajay, there, because then you get the middle of their lineup coming up.
Yeah, big, huge out there. Mark Lowe striking out Rajay Davis in the seventh inning, and then perfect eighth for Aaron Sanchez with a phenomenal play by Troy Tulowitzki to start that inning. And then Roberto Osuna falls behind J.D. Martinez 3-0. And his next nine pitches are strikes to get three strikeouts, about as close to an immaculate inning as you can get. He gets his 16th save in 16 tries since being named Blue Jays closer. Osuna does have one blown save this year. It came April 27th in the eighth inning, back when Brett Cecil was still Blue Jays closer. Jays beat the Tigers 5-3, and they're on an incredible run in the AL East. We're going to take your calls, I promise, but Dave Bedini's here, musician.
I'm here for the calls, really, Mike.
Raconteur.
Favorite part of the show.
Really?
Well, no, of course. Oh, of course. You're pretty good, too. You're pretty good, too.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
So you're calling me a raconteur. Keep going.
You are, yeah. A raconteur, an author, a man about Canada. You spent a lot of time in the Northwest Territories.
I was way up in the North.
That's crazy.
I met every Blue Jay fan living in the bush.
I know. You were in touch with me, sending me Blue Jay pictures from up there.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Well, how does the Blue Jays reach get to Tuktoyaktuk?
You're sitting in an airport talking to a stranger, a person you never met before. Eileen Jacobson, if she's listening. And where do you start? I mean, they've lived their entire life on this winnowing isthmus in the middle of the Arctic Ocean, and you start with baseball. She brought it up.
Really?
She pronounced Encarnacion better than most people in these parts. Jose asked about Johnny Mack and told me that when they go on the land, you know, in the late fall, early fall, I suppose, into the winter and hunt, they drag the flat screen out, and they watch in the bush in their camp. And, because you hear a lot about the romance of the Blue Jays tie this nation together, blah, 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 but they kind of do. And they really are now. And
yeah, now is yeah, something palpable, else, no?
For sure.
I mean, it's incredible to me. I mean, I know that, well, right now we're only on locally on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, but on the interwebs all over the place, right? But when we're on the network, we're coast to coast, and people are listening in Halifax, and people are listening in Vancouver, and it's all over the place. I really never thought of the far north as a baseball hotbed.
Right. Well, I mean, I think actually the game there, I played a bit of ball in Tuck when I was there.
Which is amazing.
And you realize that it's actually, in a way, almost more precious to people who live in the far north because summer is such a, you know, it's so short, right? So you got to get your baseballing in, you know. They play all the time, right? They play four games a day, and they can play till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Midnight sun, right?
So that, and really, summer is precious to them, and baseball as a summer game is even more precious. And I even think, you know, it's funny that concept of Canada, too, because you mentioned Halifax and Vancouver, but really the land extends way beyond all of those places, and the game gets in people's veins no matter where you come from in this country.
And it is back now, amazingly.
Big time. And the Jays. And I think there is that, you know, there's those waves of people that do remember. So there's two waves, 80s, 90s, and now. And I always envied, you know, Red Sox, Yankees, lore, teams of that vintage. Where, oh, my grandfather, you know, my father's team witnessed those things. I think we're kind of getting to that place now, right, where, you know, the elders told of the times of the mighty Willie Upshaw, you know, and Dennis Lamp appeared. So those that mythology is now actually kind of significant to kids who are just sort of starting to dial into the game.
Right. Instead of the last, you know, 20 years where people were saying, yeah, I know they used to be good, but.
Totally.
Right. Now you can put those things together. And last weekend, or not last weekend, but August 16th when Bell Barfield and Mosby were here. Means a lot more when the Blue Jays are in a pennant race.
It does, yeah, big time. Well, and like tonight, geez, Mike, you know, the bottom of the ninth, just to be in the swim of that.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that I think, I mean, I don't know if this is a Toronto-centric thing necessarily. It probably isn't, but it might even be a kind of a condition of our times, I think, generally. But feeling joy in a place with a great number of people is an amazing, and it's been a long time. But that's you know, in our section, we're sitting down 125. What a beautiful section! Like kids and old people and the infirm all together, like having this wonderful moment. So joy and hope; those are things that sports, I think, were they always used to possess, and now we sort of chiseled that away a little bit in sort of quote unquote modern times. Not sound like a 7,000-year-old man,
but I think it does have to do with modern times and modern cynicism and totally. And all that stuff, where you know it's cool to not care about things. I don't want to get ahead of anything because I'm like supposed to be the voice of reason and I don't want to, you know. Mm. I do think it's likely that the Blue Jays win this division, and I think it's likely that they actually win it by a comfortable margin. One of the Blue Jay scouts said to me the other day, don't open your Christmas presents on Thanksgiving. But you were here in the swim of that today. Right. What do you think a playoff game is going to be like?
Right. Right. Well, I think that's the salient point there is enjoy it. Like, it's happening now. It's okay to enjoy it.
Right.
Right. It's okay. And
this is not a team that is set up to break your heart.
Right. And I even think like a bandwagon ride is kind of a bumpy ride and you could get thrown off it any second, but it's pretty fun, too. It's packed in there, right? But whatever. Somebody's passing around a flask.
Guy told me on Twitter yesterday when the Blue Jays lost in Texas, and Troy Tulowitzki was at bat with a runner on in the ninth inning. He lined out to end the game. He said, Why didn't John Gibbons pinch hit with Russ Martin for Tulowitzki? That's it. I'm done. So there's room on the bandwagon by at least
that's
one.
That's true.
Right? So he's back on with his flask now.
Yeah.
Dave Bedini is with us. You wrote Keon and Me.
Yes.
You're hockey-esque on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
but you've also written Baseballissimo.
This is true.
How do you balance the romance? Well, not even balance.
I don't even
because you can be a hockey fan, a baseball fan, no problem.
Yeah.
But baseball seems, and maybe it's me, more of a romantic sport, more of an historical thing, more of a leisurely father and son family thing than hockey.
Hmm.
Where do you stand on that thing, that issue?
I mean, to talk about hockey from a romantic perspective being in Toronto is super difficult, clearly,
no
right? Because it's been replaced. I mean, you know, it's an abscess, right? Like, but, I mean, I do think hockey, there's romantic properties. I think there are romantic properties to any sport, because I do think sport is the thing that gathers us together in times when we don't gather together, and it does kind of hook families together. And it's shared collective memories of places and people and any sport. Getting outside of, you know, the city and skating on frozen ponds, frozen pond, dewy field, same diff, I think, a lot of ways. I mean, they throw out your head in baseball. I mean, and, you know, they'll, you know, buddy will gouge your teeth out in hockey. I mean, they're both, in a way, there's a certain violence, I think, probably to all sport. But I just embrace all romance, really, and unabashedly. I haven't really tried to worry or care about that, because I think life is a dream, and I think sports is a big part of that dream. And for me, both games, I mean, baseball brought me to my homeland in Italy. It got, you know, my family's here with us tonight, and we all went there. Lorenzo was my son. He went when he was 10 weeks old, and he's more Italian than any of us, really. And we all went over there and went across the country, and I learned about Italy through baseball. But similarly with hockey, it's brought me to parts of the world I never thought I'd imagine. Much like music, I think there's probably even more of a corollary between baseball and music than there would be necessarily between hockey and baseball, partly.
Before I follow up on that, your family is here. Your wife is here.
There
Dave Bedini just told us he embraces romance in all forms. Thumbs up, thumbs down, please. Thumbs up. All right. Good.
One big one. There you go.
Good. Good. All right, so let's talk about music a little bit, because, I mean, the baseball, for me, the allegory is life, right? You want to be safe at home and all this stuff, and everybody needs each other.
You're doing George Carlin again, aren't you?
No, I'm not going to do the whole football versus baseball thing. But, yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. Like, you're relying on everybody to do their bid, and mm-hmm. it's great. All team sports are like that, of course, but baseball is the only one where your ultimate goal is to wind up being safe at home, which is what we want to do out of life. But there's still the, you know, you think back to the Barnstormers, and this is just sort of a modern rendition of this, people going all over the place, and you as the traveling troubadour, right? And that music element, so tell me how you you started, and I cut you off because I wanted to say something funny, but
and you did, sort of.
Thank you, kind of. Well, I'll take it. But so keep going about this baseball and music thing, because I do want to talk to you about the music as well.
Yeah, I will talk. I mean, our first tour across Canada was 1987, and my dad's Delta 88 Oldsmobile with a U-Haul. The car eventually died in Revelstoke, British Columbia, but we were heading across the country in 87, and, you know, 85 was great. But 87, the Jays were, you know, this incredible force. I mean, so many of their great elemental players, their young players, were delivering on this promise. So we were following what they were doing. We were following the Blue Jays, you know, across from west to east over 2.5 months. And there were times when you'd have time in between town, and you would stop in that diner in Churchill, Saskatchewan, because they had a television and because the Jays were on. I remember stopping in Thunder Bay and finding out that they'd hit 10 home runs against the Orioles. Or Tigers,
yeah,
I can't remember.
Against the Orioles.
Against the Orioles. And just the momentum of their season and the momentum of our experience on the road for the first time, they're intertwined forever. And then coming back in 87 and then seeing it all, you know, go down the way it did, whatever, that's something that we all kind of have to, we all live with as well. But my experiences being on the road for the first time as a musician are tied directly to my experiences following the Jays as a young team, discovering themselves, doing what they love to do.
That, and that's an amazing story. 87 was a great year and a heartbreaking year, of course.
And there was heartbreak in those shows, and there was heartbreak in that tour, and there was breakdown. Like, it was, there were so many mirrors between the two things. Really.
That was 28 years ago, and now the Rio Statics are playing again at the Art Gallery next weekend. When's the last time you guys were together on stage?
Yeah, that was 8 years in Massey Hall, 2007.
Wow.
So it's been a long time. I was thinking today about... 92 and 93, and about how we, made our defining record. Whale Music came out that same epoch. That era was just so amazing for me and as an artist, but also for a sports city and a baseball city. And yeah, here we are, 20 years later doing that and stuff. And here this team is doing what it's doing. So that's the cool thing. Sports does kind of chase you around the room a little bit when it comes to your life, I think. And it's just another, another tile in the mosaic, Mike. It's a beautiful time to gig, and it's a beautiful time to watch baseball.
Dave Bedini is here with us. Bedini Band, Rio Statics, a much published author. Which was Keanu Me the last one?
Yeah, it was.
That was the last one.
Yeah.
All right, and Baseballissimo before that. Still turning that thing into a movie?
Yeah, hopefully it's springtime. Yeah, Jay Baruchel wrote the screenplay, and him and Anton Yelchin are going to be in the movie, and Jacob Tierney's directing. So listen, fingers crossed. It's like in the movie business.
I know what it's
sure
like.
Sure, you do, Mike.
Sure, yeah.
No, Jesus. It's never happened until it's happening, but we hope it's going to happen in the springtime.
I want to be the old long in the tooth catcher dispensing wisdom.
Okay.
That's what I want to do.
All right.
I want to be the Tom Berenger of baseball.
We can do that. We can do that.
I can't speak Italian, though.
It's all right.
Since I've got you here, I'm going to take a call.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because why not? Right?
Totally.
Dave Bedini is here with us. Ian in Brampton, you're on the phone. Ian, welcome to Jay's Talk. Say hello to Dave Bedini.
Hey, Bedini, and hello, Mike Wilner. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Ian, how's it going?
Great. That's actually outstanding. I mean, just glued to my chair like every other Blue Jays fan over the past little while. Watching this team, I work downtown, so, up and down the street, seeing people in their jerseys in the TTC. Right now it's fun. There's so much going on when it comes to the Blue Jays, so it's a very exciting time right now. What I wanted to talk about was the similarities that I'm an old enough guy now that I remember running up and down Yonge Street, as a young guy with my buddies celebrating 92-93. And, it's kind of eerie, the similarities that I see with this team. Comparing it to those World Series championship teams. So from the offense with, Wamco back in the days to now, I think we're trying to come up with different nicknames for the guys, what they're doing today, to the defensive plays out there. Back in 1993, we had some great defensive players. These guys today are great defensive players. So there's a lot of similarities, but what I wanted to focus on was back in 1993, we really needed that, the shutdown setup guy and the closer guy, the back end of the bullpen. And I think everybody, everybody remembers, everybody knows Ward and Hanke. I think by the time 1993 came around, I believe that Ward was the closer around that time. But
yeah, Hanke was gone after 92.
Yeah, but I mean, we all remember the shutdown guys, Ward and Hanke, and it's kind of eerie, how we see today. I just feel that if we can get to the eighth inning, it's almost like close the book. I mean, Sanchez and Osuna's just come out of nowhere. I mean, the guy really impresses me. And today, after he went 3-0 and he, pretty much, threw 9 strikes, I think, to the next three guys.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like he was in a drop sidearm, kind of like a la Hanke, for some of us old guys who can remember when Hanke came out and, just drop sidearm.
Yeah, every once in a while. Yeah. Yeah,
so,
look, it's Ian, you're 100% right, and I appreciate the call. The Blue Jays, locked in Blue Jays lore forever will be those 8 years from 85. Well, Ward got here in 86, I guess, 87, 88, he really emerged. So 5 years where it was Ward and Hanke, and the game was over in the seventh inning if you didn't have the lead. And that wasn't always. Hanke was 0-6 in 1992, but they shortened the game. And we saw it last year in the World Series in the playoffs, the Kansas City Royals. If you didn't get to them by the sixth, it was Herrera to Davis to Holland, and the game was over. And now it's not just Sanchez and Osuna, but it's Hawkins, Lowe, and Cecil as well. Brett Cecil hasn't given up a run in 2 months. This is a short ball game. You got to beat them early.
It seemed to the Penn seemed to go from shallow to deep, weak to strong, almost in the blink of an eye. I'm sure
it was a week. It was less than a week.
Yeah. And you know that had always been perceived as a little bit of the Achilles heel, and now it's just it's really the envy of the major leagues. And you're right. Like with there's so many it's easy to see 8 and 9 with those two guys, but there's still a lot tons of options down there, right? Lots of moving parts for sure.
I want to ask you because I like to compare your life in music to these guys because I say it a million times. Every rock star wants to be an athlete, and every athlete wants to be a rock star. We found out from the Sheepdogs tonight that every rock star also wants to be a play-by-play guy. but you're talking about the tour in 1987, 28 years ago. So I'm assuming you were like 12. And you're slugging it out and trying to make a name for yourself in the music business. Your kids playing against men, it's not the competition like there is, but there's still huge
competition. But there
is.
It's competitive. Totally.
You have Roberto Osuna here who's 20 years old.
Right.
As a 16-year-old, he was playing in the Mexican League against guys who were 35, 40.
Right.
And that does something to you.
Right. And one of the interesting things that about... people, we talk about him being calm and he's got, ice water in his veins, but he's terrified. Like maybe he isn't now, but he was the beginning of this year. And I'll throw the analogy back, with you, the comparison doing those first shows, right? No matter how good the songs were, how strong the records were, you're still, when you're walking onto a big stage for the first time, right? Maybe opening for a band or something like that.
And his big league debut was at Yankee Stadium.
Right. And you're motivated almost by that terror, that fear, right? So you have to kind of use it like coal into the furnace. That's what he can do. That's what he's doing.
And he's doing amazing things. Amazing things. We'll take one more call while we've got Dave Bedini.
All right.
Here. Steve is in the nation's capital of Ottawa. Welcome aboard, sir.
Thanks. It's Chris in Chatham, but...
Chris! All right, you were like six.
Much better in Ottawa.
Way to jump the line, Chris.
Hey, got to get in here somehow.
All right.
Where I wanted to go with this was actually I wanted to go against that scout's advice, and I want to open my Christmas present in Thanksgiving with the way this team's been going. Hard not to and start thinking about a playoff four-man bullpen. I think it's pretty unanimous right now that Hutch is on the
rotation.
Other side
looking in. You were talking about the starting rotation?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, all right. Four-man rotation in the playoffs.
Four-man rotation. All of a sudden, we keep hearing about Marcus Stroman.
Yeah.
And if he comes back and he's the guy that we remember and not a guy that, hasn't seen a major league hitter in 11 and a half months, who's the next man out?
So much can happen between now and then, right?
And
that's the whole thing about, right, opening those Thanksgiving presents, opening those Christmas presents on Thanksgiving. If Marcus Stroman, he pitched well today. It was a simulated game, right? So they could control the environment. They don't have to worry about guys dropping a bunt on him and making him run because the knee is the thing, and that's going to covering first and all that stuff. So he's going to pitch in a real live, honest-to-goodness baseball game on September 2nd, and then he's going to do it again on September 7th, and then the minor league season's over. So the only place to pitch is here. And if he has two good starts on the way up, he'll be here September 12th. He'll be here September 8th, and he'll be ready to pitch September 12th. And I don't know. You can't assume that all of Price, Burley, Dickey, Estrada, Hutchison are going to stay healthy between now and the end of September. One hopes they will, but you can't assume that. So that may open a hole for Stroman. You can't assume that Stroman's going to be the guy he was. And even so, he's only made 20 big league starts. So it's not that much of a CV. But I think if he comes in and if he's Marcus Stroman, he has to be in the rotation.
And his whole vibe, it's almost that sort of the, it's this, if the Jays are this beautiful vintage automobile, he's the gleaming hood ornament that you pop on at the end. Really, because he embodies Abulian's joy and wonder. Right, when it comes to the way he plays, he has a smile on his face. And it's been great. One of the things that's great about Twitter is he's still been this presence. He's sort of been off to the side, but he's very much in sort of the mind of the Jays fans and the whole aura. But if he can land and bring and do what he does, obviously in a baseball sense, but almost in a spiritual sense, it's going to be, that's going to be your your pre-Christmas Christmas present that you opened.
Yeah, way more of a in a baseball sense. I mean, his spirit here will be great, and he's joyful, and right. all that stuff is wonderful. It really is.
Yeah, but he can play his out. He can
yeah,
play, right?
Yeah, just, yeah. And he's so, one of the best. He was last year once he was a starter, one of the best pitchers in the game. So that's going to help a ton. And I think that I have a hard time believing that you're going to move either one of R.A. Dickey or Mark Burley out of this rotation if they're
tough.
Healthy.
Yeah.
So maybe Marco Estrada goes to the bullpen and he's great there. But Estrada's also 10th in the league in ERA, right? So it's a great problem to have.
Totally, totally.
So how much are you looking forward to a potential for an October in Toronto?
Yeah, it's huge. October's going to be fun again, right? It's usually, you know, you brought up hockey before, so I don't feel so bad bringing it up, but it's always so angst-ridden, right, with what the beginning of hockey season. Man, if we're you know, wrapped into baseball in October, it's going to be a beautiful thing. Fall should be beautiful. It should be this, I mean, kids got to go back to school. That's kind of a drag. But in a way, I remember you're in school, but school ends, and then look what's going to happen. You know, the stuff that you have to look forward to in the evening, playoff games, it's a pretty beautiful thing. And, yeah, it's a city, Mike, I would say, too, like, you know, having lived in this city my entire life and, you know, been an artist in it for decades, it's a great city. It deserves a team like this.
It does.
And,
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. Hear to that.
Yeah, big time.
You know what I remember the most about hockey in 1993?
What?
Was that the night the Blue Jays won the World Series,
yes.
the Maple Leafs won their 10th game to start the season. They were 10-0 to
Crazy.
Start that year.
Yeah.
And I remember the cover of the Toronto Sun. Tiny little square up top. Leafs are 10-0.
Nice.
That was amazing.
And that's probably, that ultimately could be good for them anyways, right?
A rising tide, right?
Totally.
Raises all ships.
Big time.
David Bedini, thank you for this. You're playing the
Art
Gallery
yeah.
on, what, Friday, Saturday, Sunday next weekend?
Yeah.
Labor Day weekend?
Totally.
Can people still get tickets and stuff?
Totally sold out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So you're not even here to promote stuff.
Nah,
that's
man.
Great. Look at you.
Yeah, it's better that way.
It's a beautiful thing.
Michael, thanks. Michael, you call me David. I'm calling. But, hey, listen, this is one of my favorite radio shows of all time. Listen to it religiously. Anywhere I am in the world, I listen to it. And you're the man. And it's really, I've been waited years to be on the show, and I'm so grateful that I am. Thanks
you're
a lot.
Beautiful human. Thank you so much for coming, and I enjoyed the hell out of this.
Awesome.
All right, there he is. It's Dave Bedini, everybody. Wow. Hockey-esque on Twitter. Bedini Band, Rio Statics, doing all kinds of stuff. Oh, and the Blue Jays just made a little announcement here. They have claimed, I'm getting old, Danny Dorm off of trade waivers from the Arizona Diamondbacks and have designated Ty Kelly for assignment. Kelly was a middle infielder who was playing for the Buffalo Bisons, and the Blue Jays picked up from the St. Louis Cardinals, I want to say. I could be lying about that. But I'm going to look up and give you guys a little insight here as to who this Danny Dorm
I like him
is
all I got to say. Mike, I think I like him.
Do you?
Oh, sure.
All right. So he was on trade waivers. The Blue Jays claimed him, and the Arizona Diamondbacks said, go ahead and take him. And let's find out what his story is. Don't have his story here. We'll get his story. And we'll get it to you, and we will also continue to take your calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. As we continue with Blue Jays talk, the Jays beat the Detroit Tigers 5-3 tonight. Thanks again to the lovely and talented Dave Bedini and his entire family. Your call's coming up. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
1-2 pitch, belted left field. Back for it, Rajay Davis. Track, he's at the wall. He jumps, there she goes. Josh cracks one deep left center field. Yes, sir, there goes another one.
Back-to-back home runs by Troy Tulowitzki and Josh Donaldson in the bottom of the third inning. Broke a 1-1 tie, put the Jays up 3-1. Double play ball by Josh Tolley made it 4-1, and a home run by Jose Bautista 5-1. And the Jays went on to beat the Detroit Tigers 5-3. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Jays Talk. We're going to be taking your calls. this half hour at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Danny Dorn has been picked up by waivers. I had thought it was Dorm. We got some incorrect information off the top, but Danny Dorn has been picked up on waivers by the Blue Jays, and it looks as though the Blue Jays are kind of hoping that he might be the left-handed Chris Colabello. I mean, I know it's tough to strike lightning in a bottle like that twice, but Dorn is a 10-year pro, 31 years old, has been slugging it out in the minor leagues, and over 1,004 minor league games is at 286 with a 365 on base and a 499 slugging for an OPS of 864. He's a left-handed hitting outfield slash first baseman. And this year with Reno in the Pacific Coast League, I'll grant you, which is a hitter's haven, but it's AAA ball in Reno. This year, Danny Dorn is hitting 386 with a 444 on base and a 618 slugging in 305 plate appearances. So that's pretty good. Last year, in mostly in AAA, hit 310 with a 939 OPS, and this year got his first call to the major leagues. Did not go well in 30 at-bats. 30 plate appearances in the big leagues. No, 30 at bats, hit 167 with a 219 on base percentage. But, you know, why not? Take a flyer. Blue Jays picked him up on trade waivers from Arizona. We'll see if they call him up on September 1st or if he's just going to help out Buffalo for a while. Also, news from the broadcasting arena, and since we're in it, we might as well pass it along. The Los Angeles Dodgers officially announcing that Vin Scully will be back next year to call games for the LA Dodgers, which is just amazing. He is going into his 67th season as Los Angeles Dodgers broadcaster. He doesn't do every game anymore. He doesn't do the whole game anymore. He doesn't travel as much. But Vin Scully, his 67th year in the booth. How about that? Blue Jays beat the Tigers 5-3. Oh, and we play the Dodgers next year. If we go there, we get to see Vin Scully. We don't know. The schedule's not out yet, but that'll be very cool. Very cool, indeed. Blue Jays beat the Tigers 5-3. After the game, Drew Hutchison comes up. Josh Tolley is sent down, but he is sent down to rookie ball, Bluefield, which means he's not going to go. But what it does mean is that he'll be able to come back and catch R.A. Dickey's next start. When you're optioned to the minor leagues, you have to stay down on option for 10 days unless you come back to replace somebody who goes on the disabled list. But you don't have to remain on option if the team you're optioned to has its season finish. And the Bluefield team finishes on September 1st. And R.A. Dickey's next start is going to be on September 2nd. So how about them apples? Blue Jays gaming the system a little bit to get Drew Hutchison back here. Let's get to your calls. Here we go on Blue Jays Talk. Now, Steve in Ottawa. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I was just watching the game tonight, and you know what? I have a lot of friends that say they don't like Troy Tulowitzki because he doesn't smile a lot. He's not like Jose Reyes. He's not energetic. But I'm pretty sure I saw him smile when he had that Jeter-esque defensive play. That was just incredible out there.
That was way better than anything Derek Jeter's ever done. But, yeah, it was. I mean, that was the jump throw, the backhand. But you look at how deep he wound up in the hole after
that
let it go.
That was probably a top five play for the Jays this year. That was just incredible.
Yeah, and you know what? I honestly don't care if Troy Tulowitzki ever smiles. I don't. He's a great baseball player, and he's helping this team win a whole lot of games.
He's a career 300 hitter. Just let the guy play as he is. He's going to figure it out, and you know what? He's going to be a power. He's going to be another power of the gauntlet. It'll be fine.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, all right, Mike, I do have one question for you. I was discussing with some coworkers this week, and we're trying to figure out who is a player that has really stepped up beyond their potential this year. We were discussing names like Kevin Pillar, Chris Colabello, and Roberto Osuna, to name a couple. But I was just curious for yourself, who do you think has stepped up the most this year? That's not someone part of the gauntlet or not one of the big guys.
For me, it's Colabello.
Colabello?
I expected nothing from him. I never expected he would even be on this team, never mind such an integral piece and doing the things that he's done. And you know, when he came up and he was great at the beginning, I was thinking, all right, well, this guy is he's been an independent ball forever, and he's had a month or two like this in the major leagues before, but he's going to turn into a pumpkin soon enough. But he hasn't. He's continued to hit. He's continued to do really, really well. And where would the Blue Jays be without Chris Colabello, with that month that Jose Bautista couldn't play the field? And he's been, for me, absolutely the unheralded star of this team outside of the big guys from whom you expect lots of things.
Of course.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you, Steve. Colabello didn't have a great day today. He was 0-4, struck out a couple of times and popped up. But he's just been incredible. And again, zero big league track record pretty much except for last April. And no reason to believe he was going to be able to do this. Guy is in Ajax. You're up next on Jays Talk. Hello, sir.
Hello, Mike. How are you? Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
So I want to talk about how the recent success of the Toronto Blue Jays has affected the way I look at this team. So before the trade to Lewicki and David Price trades that Alex Anthopoulos made to acquire them, I had real issues with the team and the way that they were a bit inconsistent in how they played the game.
I think I got to tell you, Guy, that I think the inconsistency was had more to do with the bullpen being an issue, the tenuous nature of the sixth and seventh and eighth inning leads, the starting pitchers not being able to get deep in games, and it was really all those one-run games that they were losing. That was something that you really could have felt was going to turn around anyway. Now it's turned around to this incredible extent since all those trades happened. Again, 22-5 since the Troy Tulowitzki trade. Since Tulowitzki reported, like the day of the trade, they lost. Tulowitzki wasn't here yet. LaTroy Hoggins was, but Tulowitzki wasn't. 22-5 since the day Troy Tulowitzki reported. For me, it's because they fixed the bullpen. It's because they fixed the defense on the left side of the diamond. And Josh Donaldson's terrific, but Jose Reyes and whoever was playing left, whether it was Colabello, whether it was Danny Valencia, whether it was Ezekiel Carrera, not major league left fielders. Now the Blue Jays have a major league left fielder. They have an excellent defensive shortstop as opposed to a weak defensive shortstop, and they have a great bullpen. David Price, for me, was the cherry on top. I mean, again, 22-5, and David Price has only pitched five times. They're 4-1 when he pitches, 18-4 when he doesn't. Cherry on top, and the guy you want in a playoff series to pitch two or three times. But it's all the other stuff, to me, mattered more to fixing this team. Although, if David Price's five starts were taken by Felix DuBrant and they lost all five, they're 18-9, and they're not in first place. But I don't know, you could have expected them to lose all five. But David Price will be a very, very, very nice thing for this team come October and in August and September as well. Jeff in Toronto, you're next on Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. How's it going, man?
All righty.
Perfect. Long-time listener, first-time caller, pal, and it's a blessing to be outside of an engagement party that I don't want to be in and being able to talk to you about baseball. I want to talk about Osuna and the composure that this guy has for a young player. Man, I remember that first at-bat that he had against Alex Rodriguez to come in and smoke that guy down. I play for the Pickering Pirates, and all the guys who pretty much got 15 guys on our team that think they're the GMs for the Blue Jays during the trade, just before the trade deadline, they all thought that people, that we should be picking up a relief pitcher and someone who can come in and close. And I knew that Osuna was the man. If you saw it today, like, he's down 3-0 in the count, just comes back, starts piling through people. And what I really like about him as a closer, and you were mentioning it before, that he'd be a good starter, but he can really reach back and, keep that 96-mile-an-hour fastball that moves so well throughout, that last inning. And that's so important, and what I really loved today was I thought he was going to throw a fastball up and in like they'd been doing to end the game. and he comes back with that dirty curveball to end that to end the game. And I mean, that's what I call a closer. And I think he's gonna be the guy to. He's young, but he's got that composure that I think all savers need. And another thing you were talking about before was the robot umpiring. I mean, I'm a catcher, and I gotta say that you put a robot in making calls, and all of a sudden it takes so much away from the game that I love in baseball. In that, you know, a catcher can frame pitches. It's part of the game where you set up where you're calling pitches, and if you turn the game into get robot umpiring, it's really gonna take away from the baseball game that we all loved for the last couple hundred years. So.
I think people said the same thing about instant replay. For me, the most important thing is getting the call right. A strike is a strike, no matter whether a catcher frames it or not, no matter how it's caught, no matter how you try to deceive an umpire, no matter whether an umpire can see it or not. A strike's a strike and a ball's a ball. And, you know, especially at many lower levels of baseball, umpires pride themselves still on having their own strike zone, which I think is the most ridiculous thing ever. For me, it's just really simple. You're safe or you're out. A strike is a strike. A ball is a ball, regardless of whether a human being is making the call or not. I think ultimately that's what you want.
You're right. I feel that's still part of the je ne sais quoi of baseball where, yeah, it is ridiculous, especially in minor league ball where you got umpires. You know, I've got a big strike zone today. Well, good for you, buddy. But at the end of the day, it's about how a pitcher and catcher can work through the lineup and try to figure out the right type of pitches that you're gonna get. So, I mean, you make a valid point, but I think it would ruin the game a little bit. I like the pitch tracker. I think it's great, but I mean, at the end of the day, and I like what they've done with instant replays. But I still think that the bare bones of this game is learning the strike zone, hoping that the umpire is going to remain consistent, and if not, you know what. That's the job of the coach and the manager and the pitchers and the players and the catcher to have that relationship with the guy and tell him and rein him in when he's screwing up.
I see what you're saying. I just don't. For me, I just want, at this level anyway, at the ultimate level of the game, to be as right as possible. And if we can be, then we can be, and that's what I think they should do. But again, I don't want to get into a long, protracted debate about robot umpires when all this stuff is going on. I do appreciate the call, absolutely. Thanks for it, and I want to get some more people. So let's get some more people. Blue Jays beat the Tigers 5-3. Nick in Toronto, you're next.
Hey, Mike, first time caller. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
Question I have for you is, with the Jays star power, you know, you have Donaldson, you got Batista, you got Edwin, you even have David Price now, why can't they not get a shot to be on Sunday Night Baseball? You know, 8:05, basically that start time, you know, that prime time spot where America and Canada can both watch the Jays, you know, slug it out. I think it'd be amazing. Wouldn't you say so?
I'm all for the Blue Jays getting recognition south of the border, and I think we all get really caught up on that because, you know, having lived here my whole life, we want to be recognized. We're like the little brother to the big giant, right? When America sneezes, we get a cold, all that stuff. And we want them to know we're here, and we want them to appreciate us, and we want them to recognize us. But look, ESPN is an American company. It gets its ratings from the American cities in which there are people who subscribe to them. ESPN has zero subscribers in Canada. So when ESPN considers putting the Blue Jays on a Sunday Night Baseball game, they understand that they're going from two local markets, which they would get on any other baseball game they broadcast, to just one local and the national audience. And that's why it's not going to happen. So I don't, ESPN has done Monday Night Baseball with the Blue Jays. The ESPN radio game was Wednesday night, as Tom Young points out, in Texas. They've done Wednesday Night Baseball. They just haven't made the Blue Jays their number one big national broadcast on that Sunday night platform, and they're not going to. They're not, because they lose a vast majority of an audience that they could pull in by putting on a team that doesn't have a local market. The only one in Major League Baseball. So I understand why Blue Jays fans really want to see the Jays on Sunday Night Baseball. I understand the recognition. I remember in 1987 when the Blue Jays were the NBC Game of the Week, and Vin Scully was the broadcaster, and Joe Garagiola, and how awesome that was. But it's not going to happen. It's just not. Sorry. We will take some more of your phone calls. Ooh, and we got the Fox Game of the Week. Saturday against in New York against the Yankees, September 12th, says Tom Young. And that could be Marcus Stroman's first start of the season. So there you go. National Fox game on September 12th. That's a 4 o'clock start, right? 1 o'clock start. It's a 1 o'clock start on September 12th. So there you go. It'll be on Fox. Won't be on ESPN. We'll take some more of your calls in a second. But Barry Davis talked to Jose Bautista, who walked and homered and singled in the Blue Jays' 5-3 win. Let's hear that.
Jose, you've been waiting so long to be playing meaningful games here at the end of August. There seems to, I've been watching the outfield, there's a little extra snap in your step out there. You're really getting into the fans here tonight, aren't you?
No, definitely. Yeah, I mean, everybody's been waiting. The energy here is unbelievable tonight, and we all feed off of that. So it's been great. We've been playing great baseball, and we just want to focus on that and continue to do that and see where we end up.
How big is it when you come off a long road trip, especially on the West Coast, to come back and take that first one?
Oh, it's great. I mean, especially with the travel itinerary, we got in last night. We played a day game in Texas. It was super hot. Everybody's kind of beat up. Still came out today and had a lot of energy and won the game. Good pitching performance by Dickey and a good team effort and great team win.
Yeah, home runs, defense, pitching. And can you say enough about the job that 20-year-old Roberto Osuna has done in his first year, especially as a closer?
I don't know. Every day that passes, I get to admire him more. He's doing a tremendous job. And he's keeping his poise out there. He doesn't let any situation get inside his head, and it's been great. We need him down the road, so we need him to keep his composure like that, and he's been doing it all year, so it shouldn't change.
We'll get used to these crowds. We're going to see them the rest of the season.
No, everybody could get used to this. We're loving it.
They're loving it, says Jose Bautista. That interview with Barry Davis in the wake of today's 5-3 win for the Blue Jays over the Detroit Tigers. The Jays were 50-51. They're now 72-56. A game and a half clear of the New York Yankees in the American League East. The Yankees, well, they're not a game and a half clear of the Yankees yet in the AL East, but the Yankees are beating Atlanta 14-3 in the top of the ninth. So it's going to be a game and a half. Back to the phones for a little bit. Francis in Toronto. Hello, Francis. Hello, Francis.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Mike. Yeah. The way Roberto Osuna is pitching right now, he's had Tommy John surgery, correct?
Yes.
So I think every teenager in the minor leagues should get Tommy John surgery before they start their big league career. What do you think about that? It's just ridiculous what he's doing right now.
Roberto Osuna could throw 97 before the Tommy John surgery. Most of the teenagers in the minors can't.
One quick question, Mike. Right now, it's only Brett Cecil as a left-handed pitcher out of the pen. Are they trying to find another left-handed reliever?
Nope.
Because that doesn't concern you or
John
Gibbons?
Not at all. Why should it? You've got you've got Mark Lowe, Latroy Hawkins, Aaron Sanchez, Roberto Osuna, all of whom can get out lefties, no problem.
Because in the playoffs, the starters have a shorter leash.
The who?
R.A. Dickey's knuckleball.
The starters have a shorter leash, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might have to use Sanchez in the sixth or seventh inning, maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on that. But in the playoffs also, there are a lot more days off, so you can use your relievers a lot more often. You can basically, in a seven-game series, Aaron Sanchez and Roberto Osuna could pitch an inning six times in a seven-game series.
I did look at Sanchez's stats. He is hitting, right-handers are hitting, I think, 140, something stupid like that. I think left-handers are hitting about 280, so...
Well, remember, you're
that's
looking.
The only one thing that maybe Alex Anthopoulos might target for the playoffs run. No.
Okay. No. You just don't need it. It's sort of the same idea, a little bit of the whole Ben Revere should lead off debate. It's because you have someone who fits the profile better, even though he's not as good, so he should be going instead. It's true. Lefties are hitting. Going into tonight, 282 against Aaron Sanchez with an 895 OPS. Righties are hitting 149 with a 425 OPS. And today he got Victor Martinez out, who was the only lefty he faced. But what you have to remember, too, is that a lot of that came with Aaron Sanchez as a starter. Aaron Sanchez has been back and has been working out of the bullpen since returning from the disabled list. And as a reliever, he has given up four hits, 49 plate appearances against him, and batters are 4 for 46 against him. That's lefties and righties. 4 for 46. Let that sink in for a second. Are we letting it sink in? Hopefully it's sinking in. 4 for 46 against Aaron Sanchez. Since he became a reliever, the league is hitting 87 against him. Don't worry about whether or not Aaron Sanchez can get lefties out. He's doing just fine. Everybody's doing just fine right now, because you can't be 22-5 unless everybody's doing just fine or a lot better than that. And that's what the Blue Jays are, 22-5 in their last 27 games, and they're going to try to make it 23-5 tomorrow. Drew Hutchison is back from the minor leagues. Hutchison recalled after the game. Josh Tolley was sent all the way down to Rookie League Bluefield because their season ends on September 1st. And that means the Blue Jays can bring him back September 2nd. He doesn't have to wait the usual 10 days on option. And so he will still be able to catch R.A. Dickey's next start. A little brilliance in the managing of this roster from Alex Anthopoulos. So Drew Hutchison goes against Tigers rookie Buck Farmer tomorrow. We're on the air at 12:30 for the pregame show, a 107 first pitch. Thanks to all those of you for calling. Thanks to Dave Bedini. Sorry to those of you to whom we could not get. We'll do this again tomorrow.